WBCA Radio is proud to present City Talk, where fascinating conversation is alive and well, with your host, Boston radio veteran Ken Meyer.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to City Talk, and this is Ken Meyer speaking. And one of the great things about having a radio show such as this is that you're able to interview people that you like. And this gentleman has been not only someone that I like, but I'm also proud to call a very dear and good friend. His name is Joe Martel. He is an author, raconteur, and former host of WROR Saturday Night Oldies, and a whole raft of other experiences that we're going to talk about. So, Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing okay for an old guy, Ken. And I appreciate you the accolades. Thank you. But I'm really just a kid, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to make a buck.
I appreciate that. You're going to make me feel younger when I get out of here. All right. I know you worked at WROR. I used to listen to you. But did you grow up in Boston?
No. Well, actually, I spent so much time in Boston. A lot of my relatives are from the Boston area. But actually, I grew up in Portland, Maine, about 100 miles north of the great city. But, yeah, that's where I actually started in radio as a high school correspondent on one of our local radio stations.
That's a lot of people don't know that that's the best way to get started. And as they say, learn from the ground up. And I gather that's what you did.
Yeah, my sister, my older sister, Rosie, said, you know, you're always playing radio. There's a contest on WCSH 970 AM, whether it's called Do You Want to Be a DJ? Write a letter, and maybe you'll win the contest. Well, I wrote a letter, I got my pen scratching, and I sent it in, and about a week later, I had the station on, and it was Bob Arnold's Blue Room. I'll never forget. It was on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon until, I think, 5 or 6, and he announced my name as the winner. And, Kenny, I was so nervous. I went in, I took the bus in, and went up to the radio station. It was in the old Eastland Hotel, Congress Square Hotel, I'm sorry. That's what the call letters WCSH stood for, Congress Square Hotel. So I went up to the fifth floor in radio, and they escorted me in, and Bob couldn't have been nicer. And he said, boy, you really like this, don't you? I did my little spiel, you know, and he said, why don't you come back and do a weekly feature, because I'm looking for high school reporters. So every week from then on out, that was my sophomore year at Chevers High School in Portland, Maine, I took the little bus in after class and reported the news of my school, and it was a lot of fun. And I, to this day, I tried to find Bob later in life when I wrote Radio Pro, my first book, but I couldn't find him. I know he was from the Pennsylvania area, and maybe he's still out there somewhere. I really would like to catch up with him and thank him for actually giving me my start in radio.
No one except those that are in the business know what a thrill it is to be able to sit behind a microphone and reach hundreds of thousands of people. There is nothing more exhilarating in life than to be able to do that.
Well, to this day, talking to you right now, it's a kick for me. I love radio. I always will. And I think it's changed a lot, as you know, Kenny. It's just it's not the same these days. But thank goodness for programs like City Talk. Maybe we can hang on to radio. I hope so.
Well, I appreciate that. And the city's given me a wonderful opportunity to be able to do this. So an announcer in Washington, D.C. once said to me, and he used to work with Willard Scott, as a matter of fact, and he said to me, you know, if you really like radio and it gets in your blood, you'll never get out of it. And boy, he was right, because I still love it.
That's so true.
How long did you do this before you got to Boston?
Oh, gosh. a little sidebar, if I may.
Yep.
WCSH, 20 years later, I went back to manage that radio station. And I was thinking about that the other day, and I thought, gosh, Joe Martel, you are really fortunate. the station you started on as a high school reporter, I was sitting behind the big desk in the corner office, and I was the manager of the station. But I was in and out of Portland quite a lot. Actually, I really got my first commercial job at WFAU in Augusta, Maine, 1340 on the dial, and it was a night shift, I should say, because, gosh, I remember went in at 6 o'clock at night. I did the news after CBS News, and then I did a program called Organ time. It was organ music, Kenny, and it was sponsored by the Lace Fuel Company. I'll never forget it. And that went for 15 minutes, and then I did another, I think it was like Beautiful Music, until 7 o'clock. And then at 7 o'clock until 11, when we had a news roundup, and then we signed off the station, it was all kinds of music. But I got fired after a couple of months because it was like Frank Sinatra and Rosemary Clooney and all these classic artists. But when I got off the air at 11 o'clock, the only place in town that was open where I could grab a hamburger was across the street at a place called Doc's Tavern in Augusta, Maine. I don't know if, even know if it's still there, but all the local kids hung out there. And I was relatively young myself at the time. And they would always tease me about playing this old fogey music. So I said, well, I'll fix that. The next night I went in, I was playing Ricky Nelson and Elvis Presley and and rocking up the radio station. And all of a sudden, the door opened, and in came Norm Gallant. And, boy, I'll never forget the look on his face. And Mona Toothaker, who was the station manager. That's her real name, too.
I was going to say, there's a name. There's a name for the history books.
And there was a weekend guy named Stanley standing behind them, and he looked like a little professor. And I said, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And Norm walked into the control room and said, get up. And I stood up, and he said, Stanley, take over the board. And Stanley sat down, and he said, you're fired. And I'll never forget, I drove back to my mom's in Portland. It was about a 45-minute trip, tears streaming down my face, and I thought, I'm never going to work in radio again. I just got fired from my first job. And making a long story even longer, years later, in 2013, I was inducted into the Maine Radio Television Hall of Fame in Augusta. So I told that story. Norm had passed on, but his widow was sitting there. She was a lovely lady. And after I gave my little speech, I went over to say hi to her and to give her a little hug. And she said, Joey, I'm so sorry that Normie fired you. You were such a good person and good talent. And I said, no, he helped me out tremendously. I never changed the format at any station again without management's permission, Ken.
Yeah.
It was quite a lesson. That was my first job in radio.
Did you enjoy your job as a program director? And I asked that because a fellow that we just talked about before he went on the air named Larry Glick had that job in Florida and absolutely hated being management.
Put it this way, Kenny. I don't mix well with the suits. I'm an on-air guy. And I did not like being program director because there were a couple of times when you had to let people go that I really liked. You know, Portland's a small community. I hired a lot of my friends that I went to school with. In fact, Bill O'Neill is still on the air up in Maine, and he's on a couple of stations every weekend doing an oldie show. And Bill sent me a note not too long ago, and he said, you hired me 3 times, Joe. He said, was it because there was a lack of talent in Portland, or did you really like me on the air? And I said, no, Billy, I really enjoyed you. But, no, I didn't really like it. I liked the aspect of programming a station, but I didn't like the downside of it, which was sometimes you had to let people go. Management was terrible. When I left WCSH and I went to Boston, that was my jumping off point. And I said, I need to stick to one thing, and that's being on the air. I can't wear 8 million hats. And that's what I was doing. I was managing the station. I was on the air with Bruce Glazer. I don't know if you remember Bruce. He was sports director at Channel 6 in Portland for years, and he did a morning radio show with me. And he was great. He was a good friend, and he passed away a few years ago. And I miss him to this day. But Brucey, and, we were talking about, Joe, you're wearing so many hats. And I said, yeah, I'd be on the air from 6 to 9 in the morning with Bruce. Then I'd sit behind the management desk. Then I had to go over sales reports. Sometimes I had to go out on sales calls. I didn't get home till like 7 or 8 o'clock at night.
Wow.
I had no life. And it was a really difficult time. And that's when I said, I got to stick to being on the air, and I made the transition down to Boston, and thank gosh, everything fell into place.
Tell me about the Saturday Night Show.
Oh, Saturday Night Live with the Oldies. I'll never forget this. Gary Berkowitz hired me. Matter of fact, he hired me 3 different times. He hired me at 98.5, WROR, which I think is WBZ Sports Talk now.
Yeah, it is.
And then he hired me again at the new ROR, which was F-105, the old WVBF in Boston, to do afternoons. And then he hired me in West Palm Beach, which is another story, which is my last radio job before I lost my voice. But Gary called me up one night. This was back in 1979. And I remember I was sitting at my – I was living in Maine at the time and commuting to Boston. And he said, Joey, do you know anything about oldies? And I said, I played oldies when they were newies. I said, sure I do. He said, well, we're thinking about putting an oldie show on Saturday night. Do you want to do it? And Ken, I said, when do I start? He said, this Saturday night. And I said, you got it. Because I think I was working weekends at the time anyway. So I went in, and I was like a one-man band. I had no producer, no engineer, nobody to pull the songs for me. I ran around that control room like a crazy person because I had to tape the person, the phone call coming in, the request. Then I had to find the song. They were all on cartridges back then. You remember cartridges?
I've heard of them, yes.
and I found the song, and I put it on, and Gary called, and I think halfway through the show, it went on at 7 and got off at midnight. And I think he called around 9:30 or 10, and he said on the hotline, and he said, Joe, this is fantastic. He said, you're doing a great job. Keep it up. And there it goes. And 12 years later, until new management came in and said, we're going to change the format of the radio station. That show you do on Saturday nights is no more. And I said, wait a minute. I said, this show has been number one across all demographics for 12 years. People love the show. It's not necessarily me. It's an opportunity for them to call in, hear their favorite songs, and shoot the bull with me for, you know, a minute or so. He said, no, we're making a format change. And that's when they changed the call letters from WROR to Mix, you know, WBMX.
Yep.
And I was shattered. I'll be honest with you. I was ready to pack it in right then and there. And I remember Andy, I was doing the Joe and Andy morning drive show, and Andy said to me, Joey, that's okay. Don't worry about it. He said, We'll find another job. We'll go someplace where they appreciate you, and you'll be back on with that show. Well, that never happened. Andy left, and they broke that team up. And, you know, Andy went over to WEEI, where I think you ended up, too.
Yeah, I ended up there. Boy, that's a whole other story, too, about leaving leaving a station like BZ after being there for 14 years. Hardest thing I ever did in my life was to leave BZ, but... they were going through some interesting times at that time as well. And when I went to EEI, they couldn't have been nicer. Man, they gave me receipt cards to restaurants, and I only had to work. I only had to work 2 hours a day and make more money than I did working almost seven days a week. Now, nobody could turn that down.
No, but you deserved it too, Ken. You know, I used to listen to you. When I get off the air at midnight, I'd listen to you, and I think you would have on Mel Simon, right?
Yes, yes.
Am I right about that?
Yes.
And you would do trivia and old-time radio and stuff. And,
yep.
And I love that. So I'd listen to you all the way driving up to Maine.
That was
one of the beauties of BZ, as you know, had a tremendous signal. So I could take you right up into my driveway. And sometimes, Ken, you were so interesting
that.
To listen to. I'd be sitting out in the car, and my wife would be in the window going, what are you doing? And I said, I'm listening to Ken Meyer. I said, he's got a great guest on. And I'm glad I have the opportunity to say that publicly, Ken, because you do great radio. And I could feel it in your voice. You're just like me. You love being on the air. And I really like that about you.
Well, I enjoyed it. It was a great time. And, of course, BZ had a fabulous signal.
And oh, yeah.
I always used to sit there. I mean, we get calls from Washington and Baltimore, and I used to think, boy, if I were in Washington or Baltimore, I wonder if I would call me up on the air. And I always said yes.
It sounds like when I left Portland once and then I went back, I got a job at WLW in Cincinnati.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which was a 50,000-watt clear channel station.
Yep.
And I was on every night from midnight, six nights a week, until 5 a.m. And then at 5 a.m., Bob Miller would come in with that big smile on his face. He was the farm director of the radio station, and I would be his announcer till 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
But, gosh, the calls we got, they covered just like BC, 37 states and part of Canada. And yep. Gosh, what a kick that was. It was like, as you know, Ken, it's like being on your own, having your own radio network.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can still remember the first time I ever had to go on the air doing Calling All Sports from 8 to midnight.
Wow.
On a Saturday night, and I thought, boy, I blow this. Man, I'm out of here. I'm gone. I was never so nervous in my entire life. And after the show was over, I got a telegram from one of my instructors in college who was in Syracuse, New York, and heard the broadcast. And boy,
wow.
What a lift that was.
What a kick that must have been. You know, I know how you feel because Cliff Hunter was on vacation in Maine, and I was doing middays at WGAN,
yep,
which is still on the air at 560 on the AM dial. And he and his wife were vacationing up in, I think, Rockport, Maine. Up the coast from, but GAN had a great signal all the way up the coast, up into the Maritime Provinces. And I got a call at the station. And he said, Joe, this is Cliff Hunter. He said, do you ever think about coming to Cincinnati? And I said, excuse me? And he said, I'm the program director of WLW. My wife and I are on vacation. We like what your sound, and we're looking for an all-night guy. So anyway, I went to WLW, thanks to Cliff Hunter, but when I went in the studio that first night, Ken, I had to come on after Cincinnati Reds baseball, and I was so nervous. I was shaking when I turned the mic on and said, WLW,
yeah.
The voice of the Bengals, the Reds, and the Royals. They carried the Cincinnati Royals basketball team then, and I was shaking like a leaf, and Cliff came in when I went to my first song, and he said, are you okay? And I said, yeah. I said, I'll be okay now. I said, I had to get that first break out of the
yep.
way. But I was so nervous.
Oh, yeah. It's when you're on a station like that,
you know,
I finally got over being nervous because I said, you know what? It's crazy thinking about people in 38 states listening to me and a caller. If I just concentrated on myself on the caller, like we're sitting here shooting the breeze, we're going to be okay. And it worked.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. When I was a kid growing up, you know, I always loved radio and television. My dad, we didn't have a lot of money. I don't even know if you could say we were middle class. I think we were lower class. But anyway, Dad had, somehow he got money, and he got 7 shares of stock in Crosley Broadcasting. Powell Crosley, which originally owned WLW, radio and television.
Yep.
And every time he'd get that prospectus in the mail, I would grab it because it had a section on the radio station and the TV station. And I would read about Crosley Broadcasting and WLW. So you can imagine what it was like when I went to work there in Cincinnati, and my mom would call me, or she'd write me a letter, and she'd say, your dad gets the biggest kick out of listening to you. He won't let me sleep at night. They're in Portland, Maine, in bed, listening to their son on the station that he had 7 little shares in Crosley Broadcasting stock. At the time, it was owned by AFCO Broadcasting, but I'll never forget that. I've had a lot of things happen to me in my life and in my career, like the CSH story, the WLW Crosley Broadcasting story. I've been very, very fortunate with my career, Ken.
Yeah, me too. I've got similar stories to that because I used to listen to BZ when I was in college. And when I would come home and there was a chance for me to work there, my parents and I would listen to the station and listen to a fellow named Guy Manila do Calling All Sports.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when I was on the air, my parents used to turn a tape recorder on at midnight and tape a couple of hours of the program. And the next day I'd get a call and a critique on how I did with the broadcast from my parents.
Where did you go to college?
I went to college here in Boston at a place called Graham Junior College.
Oh, sure.
Used to be Cambridge School of Broadcasting.
Yes,
Gary LaPierre, myself, Don Batting, and I don't know who else, but those were 3 people that went there and all came to BZ afterwards.
My God, those are heavyweight names.
Oh,
great,
yeah.
Broadcasters, too. Don Batting, yeah. And Guy Manila had the sound of a dog, didn't he, at the beginning of the Calling All Sports?
No, he had
a dog boy. Yeah.
He had, they used to have a lady named Mary Rice, as a matter of fact,
yeah.
who worked in the, and she used it in this sexy intro of Calling All Sports, 254-5678. and she was great at stuff like that. And she did she did Beach Reports later on.
As, I remember.
As Lorelei.
Yeah.
And she's passed away since then. But, boy, what a great voice she had. And,
I remember her now. Calling All Sports.
Yeah.
Calling All Sports. Yeah. But I grew up listening to BZ in Portland. I mean, I listened to a lot of stations, WABC,
yep.
77, used to bomb right up the coast. So I listened to Cousin Brucey.
Oh, yeah.
When I was doing the oldies show, Bruce Morrow would tape his own show in New York, fly in, and co-host Saturday Night Live at the oldies with me in Boston.
Oh,
I said, one of these nights they're going to nail you, Bruce, for doing this. He said, nah. He said, I'm okay. He said, I love doing this with you.
And I think he's still on XM Radio, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I'm still in touch with him. He's a good guy. Talk about a radio pro. My gosh.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
But I always like to find out. I mean, I had a ball meeting and interviewing celebrities. I just loved it. And I'm curious if any celebrities that you might have met that will stick in your mind forever and ever.
Oh, gosh. I interviewed so many people that... I mean, when I was in Maine radio, I used to do a weekly show, an interview show, down at the Ogunquid Playhouse. And in the summertime, everybody and their brother came through there. Van Johnson, boy, you name it. And I interviewed them. And I don't know if I could just name one person, but I think Clayton Moore, we became friends, the Lone Ranger. And that's another story. How he and I became friends. He was on my show a lot, and I think that was a big kick for me because I loved the Cowboys when I was growing up, and I got to meet a lot of them, including Jocko Mahoney, played the Range Rider. Range Rider. Jocko and I became really good friends, and I've been toying with the idea for the last several years about writing a story about Jocko because before he passed on, I promised him I would do a biography on him, and I started it, and I put it in a box, and somebody beat me to the punch last year, and they wrote a story about Jocko, and it's pretty good. I hesitated to buy the book because I didn't want to be swayed one way or the other or copy some of his information. But other people have said, you need to write a book about Jocko because you knew him, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book about Robert York, because Bob and I were friends. But that's another story.
Well, you mentioned Clayton Moore. First time I met him was either at Suffolk Downs or Foxborough.
Yeah, probably Foxborough. And there a lot.
And he and I became friends.
No kidding.
And you know, of course, that Fred Foy was the announcer for the Lone Ranger and did the opening for the TV series.
Right.
So I asked.
I love Fred.
I asked Fred Foy once if he had ever spoken with Clayton Moore, and he said no. So I got him in the studio one night, and as a surprise, put Clayton Moore on the air with Fred Foy.
No kidding, Ken.
Yeah.
See, that sounds like something you do, you rascal. But Fred Foy, what a gentleman, huh, Ken?
Yeah, he helped me get my job at WEEI.
No kidding. Well, he was the announcer on the Joe and Andy Family one. I called him up, and I said, hey, Fred, we're bringing all this old talent back, senior talent, to Boston for the Children's Christmas Fund. We brought in Gail Storm, Richard Simmons, who played Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, Bobby Diamond, who played Joey on Fury.
Joey on Fury, yep.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember his name. He was on the Brady Bunch. He played the oldest boy.
Barry Williams, yes.
And, of course, Jocko.
Yep.
Jocko and I hung out for days when he came in. And Fred said, yeah, I'll be the announcer. So he came in. So we interviewed these people for a full hour from 9 to 10 in the morning. And Fred was the announcer. And now bring him back again. This portion brought to you by, he did the whole thing. And it was just like being back as a kid listening to him do the introduction to the Lone Ranger.
Well, again, one of my heroes, Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. I love both the radio and the television show.
Did you ever get to interview Richard Simmons?
No, I did not.
Ken, you would have loved him. He was a great guy. My wife Kim and I were on vacation, and he insisted that we drive out to see him. He was living in Prescott, Arizona at the time.
Oh, wow.
You know, we were visiting Kim's folks here in Colorado where we now live, and we drove down, and he couldn't have been nicer. And he said, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you." And of course, it's always good to see Miss Kim. I mean,
yeah.
And but I love Richard. He unfortunately passed away of Alzheimer's a few years ago, but you would have loved him. He was a great guy.
Well,
had some great stories about George W. Drendel.
Oh yeah,
and how he got the role on Sergeant Preston.
That's interesting. I'm interested too in how they worked with the dog who was Yukon King.
Yeah. Well, you know, the dog, I mean, it was like 110 degrees in the studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got a husky.
And yeah, exactly.
The dog would be panting like crazy. If you watch the old reruns, which are still on television to this day, you'll see the dog like whining and
yep.
breathing real heavily. It's because of the heat from the studio lights and stuff. And but he worked well with Richie. He loved that dog.
Yeah, I don't blame him. In fact, there's Family Entertainment TV has Sergeant Preston on at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, that's right. It's 2 o'clock here. And sometimes if I'm up writing or just can't sleep, I'll turn it on, and there's old Richard doing Sergeant Preston. And, boy, I'll tell you one thing. Thank goodness they had it. They did the first year, I think was on for 3 years.
Yep.
From 55 until 58.
Yep.
And the first year was in black and white, but the second two seasons were in color. So I was pretty smart that they did that at the time, because George Trendle was known to be a spendthrift, you know, and he didn't like to spend a lot of money on it.
And the announcer on Sergeant Preston was a guy named Vic Perrin.
That's right. Vic Perrin was on CBS Radio for years on Gunsmoke.
Oh, yeah.
And Fort Laramie.
Johnny Dollar.
Great radio shows.
He was on Johnny Dollar a lot.
Johnny Dollar, yeah.
Have Gun Will Travel.
Now, tell me you interviewed him. Did you interview Vic Perrin?
I did.
Oh, my gosh.
I did, as a matter of fact.
That's great.
And he was also on an early Mannix episode with Mike Connors.
Yeah, I heard that he transitioned pretty well to television.
He did. He did some Gunsmokes, too.
Yeah.
He did some Gunsmokes. Now,
he was quite the actor. Yeah.
Oh yeah, he was wonderful. He was great. I interviewed him and Larry Dobkins and.
Well, you know, Ken, just talking to you, your enthusiasm comes through, and I think that's what I think people sense that when they were on the air with me. I really liked interviewing them, and I really wanted to know the nuts and bolts of what they were all about in a nice way.
Yeah.
There was no meanness about it, and that's another reason I like listening to you. You weren't a mean-spirited guy. You were just interested in the person you were talking with.
Right. No, I was never that way. I never went for the jugular vein and all that stuff.
No, me neither.
I always figured if the person was nice enough to come in and sit down with a character like me, I was going to extend every kind of courtesy I could to these people.
Well, you know, that's another thing. Don't take yourself too seriously, right?
Right, exactly.
Take your job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously.
I'm jealous because Richard Simmons was one of my heroes. I had a lot of them, and
I'm going to have to send you some stuff about Richard Simmons. He was a good pal, a really really good guy.
Yeah, I like to think that, and I it's nice to find out I was right.
Now, he wouldn't have been disappointed. At the time, he was single, I think, and his first wife passed away. And he was trying to put the moves on Gail Storm, and she wanted nothing to do with them when they were in town. And she says, "Joey, he keeps coming on to me." And I thought, "Oh, come on. I mean, here I got these people in their 70s, I think maybe near 80 at the time, and they were acting like high school kids. It was really quite funny."
I had a chance to meet Gail Storm, as a matter of fact.
Did you?
We, for many years, did a show at Massasoit Community College in Brockton.
Yes. Yes.
And we got Gail Storm to come in, and my claim to fame is I got kissed by Oh Susanna.
Oh, my gosh. We were friends for years.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. She was on the Oldie Show. She came on the Oldie Show. She had quite a music career herself, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, she had some hits. The two I can remember were Dark Moon and I Hear You Knockin'.
I Hear You Knockin', Dark Moon, and Now Is the Hour. Her third song.
I didn't know she did that.
She did that too, yeah. She sent me, every year we got a Christmas card from her. And the last card we got, she had recorded a couple of songs. And her daughter got her into the studio. And boy, I'll tell you, that's a treasure. We have that. We take it out every Christmas, and we listen to Gail singing, and it brings back so many memories. She was another lady. She fought alcoholism for years, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She was a recovering alcoholic, and I've had some experience with that in my own family. And so she and I would talk a lot about it, and she finally went and got treatment, and it saved her life because she was on a downward spiral there for a long time. So, but she cleared up, cleaned everything up, and she did very well.
Now,
nice lady.
You had probably one of the scariest things happen and the worst to happen to a radio personality, and you made reference to it earlier. You lost your voice. It must have been terrifying. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it wasn't a high point in my life, I'll tell you. I was on the air and at Sunny 104.3 in West Palm Beach, and I'd been dealing with a cold, and, you know, I was in and out of laryngitis, and I went on the air because we were in a rating period. And, you know, when you're doing morning drive, you got to be there. You got to be there no matter what shift you're doing.
Exactly.
You know, you can't bang in sick, and they don't like that too much. And I remember I was on the air, and all of a sudden, I think we were in the 8 o'clock hour. I was on from 6 until 9, and my voice started going south. And Lindy Rome, great air talent, nice person, good friend, she was doing the show with me, and she said, we went to a break, and she said, Joey, are you okay? And I said, I'm losing my voice. And then it just popped. It was just like, just popped, and nothing came out. So I went to the doctors. She finished the show. I went to my doctor, who was up the road a piece from West Palm Beach in Jupiter, and he said, excuse me 1 minute, Joe. And I said, how you doing? I said to him, how you doing, Doc? And he said, I'm doing fine, better than you are. He said, hold on 1 minute. And he went in the other room, and Kim was there with me, my wife, and I said, I didn't say anything because I couldn't talk. And he came back in, he said, there's an ambulance coming to take you to Jupiter Hospital. And Kim said, what's going on? I said, I don't know. He said, but we got to get some x-rays on Joe. So they took me to the hospital, and I thought, this is great. This was embarrassing. How'd I go on the gurney, you know, in the ambulance from the doctor's office, and people there, patients are looking at me and like, what's going on? And I go in the hospital, and they did some tests and stuff, and I'm sitting there in my Johnny in the bed, and I got a little chalkboard because I couldn't talk, and I would write little notes to Kim, and the doc came in, Dr. John Lee, L-I, Dr. John Lee, and he looked at me and he said, guess what? And I said, what's going on? And I said, when can I go back on the air? And he put the chalkboard down. And he said, Joe, we don't even know if you'll ever speak again, let alone go back on the air. And I started to try and talk. And he said, don't even try to whisper. Don't do anything. And I said, and I wrote, okay. And 31 days later, I couldn't talk for 31 straight days. And Ken, it took me a year to get my voice back. I had to learn how to speak all over again. I had to learn the alphabet, not learn the alphabet. I had to say the alphabet. And I came out here to Colorado because no job. You know, I was off the air. That was the end of it. And as Jerry Williams used to say, another great Boston talk master,
yep,
they didn't even give me a party, Joey. I had nothing. I never, ever said goodbye to the air, to my listeners. And Kimmy and I put the house up for sale, and we had land out here in Colorado adjacent to where her mom lived, and we decided to move out here, and I found a great speech pathologist in Grand Junction, Colorado, and she worked with me 3 or 4 days a week for over a year. And at one point halfway through, I was so frustrated because the sounds just weren't coming out of my mouth the way I was accustomed to. And she says, you know what, Joey? You need to go home and relax for a week. She said, I don't want to see you for another week. She said, you've done really well. She said, but we're pushing the envelope, and I don't want to hurt your voice. So I went home, and I went back in about 10 days, and I had a new attitude, and I said, I'm ready to continue this. But it took me a year of working with this woman and to get my voice back. And even to this day, it's in and out, Ken. It's sort of like the doctor said, you know, I have 3 nodules on my vocal cords, and they didn't want to operate because he said, I may do more damage. He said, we never know what the results are going to be until you try to speak. So even to this day, if I talk too long on the phone, Ken Meyer, my voice starts to go south. But I feel pretty good talking to you because I'm relaxed. So and that's another thing. If I stay relaxed, I'm okay. If I get uptight, it has a tendency to wander away on me. But, you know, Ken, I don't want to get too mystical or religious on you, but my wife is a Christian, and I'm a Christian, and we really prayed a lot, and we had people praying for us. And I know that that brought us through some really dark times. Kim and I are both cancer survivors. My wife first was hit with melanoma, and we went to the doctor. She looked at Kim, and she said, I said, what's going on? And she said, this is stage 3 melanoma, and there are only 4 stages, Joe and Kim. And we were just blown away. And I said, what does that mean? And she said, maybe 6 months. Well, that was back in September of 04. We were still living in Florida at the time. And I didn't even know what to say. I just hugged Kim, and I said, well, we'll get through this, honey. And the reason we got through it, I really truly believe, is the power of prayer. I was on the air at that time. I hadn't lost my voice yet. And it came a few months later. And one woman that used to call the show all the time asking for prayers for certain people, I called her and I said, will you put Kim on that prayer chain of yours? It's our time. We need it. And she said, absolutely. And I do believe that that helped because, not to get too sad or too down with you about this whole subject, but my doctor, or Kim's doctor, Dr. Shapiro in West Palm Beach, said, Joe, I see one of these cases one a year. He said, I have a friend that I went to medical school with at Duke University. He sees 100 of these a week. Do you mind if I send Kim up to see him? And we said, absolutely. Well, in the interim, I lost my voice. If I hadn't lost my voice, I wouldn't have been off the air. We were in a rating period. So I got to accompany Kim. I would have probably quit anyway, because I would never let her be alone with the diagnosis of melanoma. And I drove her up to Duke University from West Palm Beach. And the doctors there did a whole bunch of tests on it. And I don't want to say they were arrogant, but let's just say this. They know what they're doing, and they don't want any input from a frazzled husband. And it was Kim's doctor, so for once I shut my mouth. So anyway, we had to go back for the results in a couple of weeks, so back we drive up there again. And the doctor came in, and he had a clipboard in his hand, and he said, Kim, we've run every test possible on you. This is after the melanoma was removed and all that. You need to know that. But they thought it might have gone into her lymph nodes, so that's what we were really concerned about. He said, we can't find a trace of it. Go climb a mountain. And he started to walk out. He said, I have no other explanation for you folks. Go climb a mountain. And he started to walk out, and I grabbed him by the shoulder. And I said, excuse me. And he looked at me, Kenny, like, oh, here we go. Here's the layperson, the concerned husband, who's going to tell the surgeon expert all about medicine. And I could just read it in his eyes. And I said, I know the answer. And he said, what's that? And I said, Kim was on the world's largest prayer chain. And he put the clipboard down, and for the first time, I saw actual emotion in his eyes. And he said, you know what, Mr. Martell, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. And he shook my hand, and he hugged him, and he walked out. And I do believe that. And I believe faith can work miracles.
Well, and I'll tell you, there's an old saying about good things happen to good people. And I think both you and Kim are examples of that. A lady who was a friend of mine, whom I interviewed and whom I'm sure you're familiar with, named Joyce Kohewick.
Oh, sure.
From Channel 4.
Yeah, I know Joyce.
Joyce had cancer like 3 times.
Oh, gosh.
And beat it all 3 times. So it's a scary disease. My mother had cancer of the throat when I was little, and she beat it. It's a very scary thing, but if you get the right kind of treatment and the right kind of people, you can do anything.
Yeah, and there's another story involving Kim, because she got cancer again after that, but she's cured. So we'll leave it at that. But once again, I really believe, and I appreciate what you said about good people. That's very kind of you, Ken. And I'll pass that on to Kimmy.
Oh, absolutely.
Chatting. But, you know, I don't know. I just, You know, I wasn't, don't get me wrong, I'm not this pious person, even though I went to a Jesuit high school. I had my time when I just kind of drifted away from my faith. But I'll tell you, if that doesn't wake you up, and the reason I shared that story with you, because I think when good things do happen to you, you have a duty, if I can use that word, to pay it forward and pass it on to other people. And Bob did that during his cancer, Bob Urich. For 5 years, you know, he fought cancer, and man, did he ever fight it too? I'll tell you, that's quite a story. Bob.
Let's get into that. You are an author, and
well, I'd like to think I tell stories.
Well, you do it great verbally, and I'm sure the written word is a super part of your life. And you've written.
I enjoy writing. I really do.
You've written at least two books that I know of. One of which,
yes.
I mean, I would love to read, which is called Radio Pro, is, I gather, a history of radio.
Yeah, Radio Pro. I really wanted to. There wasn't a book like that when I wanted to get into radio.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Emerson, they didn't have books like this, and I said, you know what? I want to do something for radio wannabes that want to get in the business. So back in 2010, I believe, maybe before that, I started taking all my notes from my morning radio show and my interviews, and I started writing Radio Pro. And I said, I don't want this just to reflect my own views on the highs and lows that I experienced in radio, and mostly highs. So I reached out to about 150 people for their comments, and I wish I had included you, Ken, but for one reason or another, I don't think I could get in touch with you at the time. I was between Florida and Colorado, and anyway, we'll make up when I do an addendum to Radio Pro, and I'll definitely use you because I love you as a friend, and I love what you bring to the table when it comes to radio. But I started with the Learn from the Masters, radio's pioneer and first air personalities, and I go way, way back. I did a lot of research. And by the way, Fred Foy does an intro in the book.
Oh, wow.
Along with cousin Bruce Morrow and a really close friend of mine who was our news person for years at ROR, Bob McNeil,
yep.
Who teaches at Curry College. And I dedicated the book to Jess Kane.
Ah.
Because I learned so much from Jess.
Yep.
And also Roger Allen Bump. Roger was news director of RKO for years. And there's a bunch of chapters in the book. It starts with America's first radio pioneer personalities. Then I go to how to develop your own air style, how to be yourself on the radio or on podcast, how to break into radio, how to be a successful air personality, the seven powerful P's to perfection as an on-air radio pro, how to communicate effectively, the importance of show prep, the art of interviewing, and I specifically name a certain celebrity who I know you interviewed, Art Linkletter.
Absolutely.
In this chapter.
Yep, and great Art, guy.
He was so good with kids.
Yep.
And he's just a great air talent. Then attitudes and actions, program directors, friend or foe, inside the world of general managers, the role of consultants, a woman's perspective on working in radio today, which is a great chapter. How to win in morning drive. It's not a great chapter because I wrote it. It's the input I got from all these people. Radio promotion, marketing, and publicity. Radio formats, news, music, talk, and sports. Attorneys, do you need an agent? Ratings and contracts. Some things to know about a career as an on-air pro. Who inspired the radio pros? I got people from every market, radio on-air people. Radio's future, which I just happened to look at earlier this morning before you and I got together, and I thought, oh my gosh, I wrote this book. The book was published in 2012 by Bear Manor Media, and I thought, gosh, this stands up to this day, Ken, and all these years later, what radio has to do to survive.
You know, I'll tell you a story. When you talk about being yourself on the air, the first time I ever went on the air, I had to fill in for Larry. No, I auditioned on the air to do Larry Glick's program.
Wow.
And I tried to do some of the things that Larry does. You know, giving a call or a round of applause, let me check, and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? I figured this is not going to work. Because it works for Glick, it ain't going to work for me. And
no, that's the same way with Howard Stern. You know, there were so many Howard Stern wannabes that came along, but that's special to Howard. You know, and so many people try to copy him, but you got to be yourself. And I think if people really pick up the book and get one thing out of it, I talk about that a lot, how to develop your own air style.
Yep.
And boy, I'll tell you, you got to be you. Whether it sells or not, whether the station likes you, whether the program director thinks you sliced bread, the next best thing to it, or doesn't particularly care for your style, you have to be you. I've worked for people in radio that didn't particularly like my style. Oh, he's too warm and folksy. He's too cuddly. Well, you know what? That's me.
Yep, and exactly.
And I guess it's time for me to move on if you don't, you know, like the way I do my show. And I was pretty insistent about that because I remember one day a program director brought me in, and I was pretty frustrated, and I know he was too. And I said, you know what? You're my seventh program director at this station.
Gee.
If I listened to each and every one of you, where the hell would I be?
Yeah.
What would I be bringing to the table? And he just looked at me from behind the desk, and he said, you know what, Joe? I never heard it quite put like that. I guess you're right. I said, it's not that I don't want to follow orders or, you know, or be a pain in the butt to you, but I know what I can do and I know what I can't do.
Right.
I could never be an Andy. Andy Mose was one of the funniest guys I ever had the pleasure of working with. He was naturally funny. He didn't have to dig down in the trenches for, you know, get dirty because he was just a naturally funny guy.
Right.
I could never do Andy.
I
was more the Dean Martin setup kind of guy. And I'm glad you said that, Ken, because, you know, Larry Glick was Larry Glick.
Yep.
I mean, there's only one Larry Glick. In fact, he's all through my book on talk radio.
Ah.
Larry, he and I spent an hour on the phone one day. He was living in Florida at the time. And honest to God, Ken, I thought he was doing a radio show. He entertained me. I was laughing. And, I mean, he was so funny. And I'm glad I got him in here before he passed on. A lot of the people that I talked with have now passed away. Gary LaPierre, who I know you know.
Oh, very well.
With. And Bruce Bradley.
Yep.
He's passed away.
Yep.
And there's just so many. Harry Harrison.
Yep.
Recently passed away. I'm glad I have the words, at least, for people to get to know them a little bit in my book, Radio Pro.
Well, in the few minutes we have left, and I would be remiss in not asking you about this, tell me about Spencer for Hire. Did you hire Spencer for Hire, or how did that all come?
No, Bob was in town filming Spencer. I didn't know who he was. I couldn't even pronounce his name. Yurich? Yurich? And I remember he was driving it to work. He had a mobile home, you know, an RV, and Bobby McGinnis, who was a big listener to the Joe and Andy family, would always have us on. And one day he was driving Bob to location to do Spencer, the first year it was on in 85. And Bob looked at Bobby, from what they tell me, and said, who are these guys? Who are these characters? He said, they're Joe and Andy. You know, they do really well. Everybody listens to them, quote unquote. And he said, I want to meet them. So he said, okay, I'll bring you over. So the next day, they came over to the radio station. I think we were located at 3 Fenway Plaza at the time. I'm trying to remember where we were. We also moved to Huntington Avenue after that. But anyway, so up comes Bob into the studio. You know, he's a big man. He was a big man anyway. And I'm only 5'10". And, man, I was like in a shadow of his. And he comes over and he says, hi. And he said, and I looked at him. I said, hi, how you doing? And I said, welcome. And he said, you don't know who I am, do you? And I said, well, I know you're an actor. And he said, well, that's good. He said, my name is Robert Yurich. He said, and he leaned over and he took my hand, Ken, and I was lost. My little mitt was lost in his hand. And he squeezed it. And he said, and he leaned over in my face and he goes, I did a little show called Vegas. And I said, Bob, I said, I'm a morning radio guy. I'm in bed at 9 o'clock. Now, this was 1980. 85, before DVRs and and all that stuff, you know. It was appointment television, Ken. People sat down and watched TV at a certain time. And I said, I'm in bed. I never saw it. And he squeezed my hand even tighter, leaned even closer to my nose, and said, my wife, Heather, and I never watched it either. And then he burst out laughing and gave me a big bear hug. And I think we bonded at that moment. I know we did, because I wasn't trying to kiss up to the big celebrity in town. And I think he liked that. And we became friends.
I know what it's like to get compliments. I interviewed a gentleman who became somewhat of a good friend of mine named Vince Bugliosi.
Yeah.
The prosecutor on the Manson case. And when we got finished, he said to me, you know what? I think you're one of the best interviewers in the country.
There you go, Ken. I believe that, too. And, you know, Ken, one of the things that and I'm going to give you another accolade because you deserve it, and I'm glad we have this time that I can share this with you. You listen, and you let the person you're talking with talk, and you don't try to... The best thing I think an interviewer can do is play off what the person you're interviewing just said. You don't have to have 8 million questions. If you need that as a crutch and a guide because you end up with a stiff as an interview subject, then you might want to have a bunch of questions. But, you know, you just naturally go with the flow, and that is quite a gift, Ken.
Well, I appreciate that. And, again, I go back to the philosophy of, look, if this person's nice enough to come on the air with me, I'm going to let them talk and make them look good. As you
well,
did
David
this.
Letterman said it, David Letterman said it best one night. He was being interviewed. I'll never forget it. And he said, if I can't make a guest feel comfortable for 4 or 5 minutes on my show, then I'm not doing my job. And boy, that stayed with me. And I thought long and hard about that after. I thought, yeah, and you need to make the person shine.
Yep, exactly. And the other thing is, too, when I would interview somebody famous, half the time I'd be sitting there and saying to myself, wow, I'm sitting here with, it could be Mel Allen, it could be Connie Francis, it could be Vince Bugliosi, it could be Dick Clark, it could be anybody like that whom I've all come in contact with. And I just sit there and think, man, I'm getting paid to listen to them talk.
Yeah, you know what, Kenny, I hear you. When I was on in West Palm Beach, I have the honor of interviewing for a full hour on my morning show, Kurt Gowdy. I was always a fan of Kurt Gowdy when I was a kid listening to Red Sox baseball. And he was just so good. He had so many great stories.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, you know, so when you asked me earlier, you know, who I've interviewed, I mean, you name it. I've really been blessed, really, really fortunate.
I interviewed Gowdy, as a matter of fact, and I played it one night when I was filling in for Glick. And after the interview was over, our program director called me up on the air and said it was one of the best interviews he'd ever heard.
I believe it. I believe it. I just, because I know you. And I know you get excited, and that makes me get excited. And it's, as a listener, driving up to Maine, listening to you all night, you were a friend, and that's what radio has lost. Radio has lost the one-on-one. And, you know, when I was on, for the first time when I did that station break on 50,000-watt WLW, Shaking Like a Leaf, and you were, the first time you filled in on BZ, you were nervous.
Oh.
That's a compliment to us in a way, because our adrenaline was flowing, and it shows that we didn't want to screw it up.
Exactly.
And, It was an honor to be on these stations.
Oh.
See, that's all lost now with voice tracking and stuff of that nature, I think.
Yep. Well, syndication has a lot to do with it, too. I mean, it's...
Oh, absolutely.
It's
absolutely
great.
Absolutely. We need to get back to doing more local radio. If we don't do more local radio like City Talk, I don't know what's going to happen to the future of radio. Because, first of all, young people have no place to train any longer. The mom-and-pop stations are gone.
Yeah.
And you can do a podcast, and you can learn a lot from doing that. But there's nothing like being on radio, period, on radio.
Oh, no question. I'll tell you, it's again, as I've said before, the only people that understand it are the people that have been in the business and know what it's like to sit in front of that microphone
and absolutely
and to turn it on and to say to yourself, man, I'm in so many homes. You know, I hope they're enjoying this. And I always made sure that if I was going to interview anybody, I got a book read, that if they had written a book, because I knew what they wanted to say and I could ask them the right questions to bring it out. I was never a Larry King who never read any books. I
know. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
And I know Larry, and I just can't believe he went through it. He had a good career. He was a big hit and a successful career, but I just can't believe he didn't read up on the subject matter.
I think he should have read a book on marriage. I think he's been married about six times. Listen.
Yeah, they used to. I remember when I was represented by Bob Wolf, the late Bob Wolf, great guy.
Yep.
Larry was represented by him, too. And whenever he announced he was getting married again, they would all look at each other in the office and say, wonder how long this is going to be.
Yeah.
And, gosh.
Well,
he had a tough go of it.
He just went through one that lasted for 20-plus years, and they're getting divorced.
Oh, he's divorced now? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Him and Elizabeth Taylor could probably tell a lot of stories.
I'm sure of that.
Listen, I want to thank you for giving up some part of your morning to sit down here and talk to me. I have thoroughly enjoyed this. You are what radio and the media are all about. And
well, thank you, Ken. I enjoyed it, too. It's always fun to talk with you, another radio pro, and you are definitely all of that and more, Ken.
Thank
you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I hope the chance comes when you and I can sit down with Kim and my wife, Terry, and break bread face-to-face.
We'll do that.
I'm looking forward
we'll
to that.
Me, too, and I think we may be back in the Boston area with my Robert Urich book this summer, so we'll definitely be in touch with you.
Oh, great. It'd be great.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Listen, you take care of yourself. Say hi to Kim.
You too. Thank you.
And enjoy that weather up there. I wonder about Denver, Colorado, but hey.
Well, you know what, Ken? Guess what? It's 61 degrees here in Mesa, Colorado today.
Ah, in Boston, so. Last time I checked, it was 41.
So we got you by 20, and we're at 7,800 feet elevation. So.
Yeah, it's a little cooler out here.
But, yeah, I think there's something to this global warming thing, too, pal.
Yeah, I think so. But, again, thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome, Kenny. Thank you for having me on. It's nice of you to give me the time to share some of my radio experiences. I really appreciate it.
And it's all worth it. I hope that our audience enjoyed this at least half as much as I did, because I've been having a ball.
Me too.
So
thanks, Ken.
Thank you again. Have a good day, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to another great conversation with Ken Meyer and friends. You can contact Ken by email. The address is kjmeyer7@gmail.com. That's kjmeyer7@gmail.com. Tune in next time for more conversation with Ken Meyer on City Talk.